She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And get ready to have some really deep thoughts about our show today. It is made possible due to the generous support of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. Habitat's goal is to build safe, decent, affordable, quality homes for people in need, and what a great job they are doing at that. You can learn more about them by visiting their website at habitattucson.org, or anywhere you are, at least in the United States, just Google Habitat for Humanity. You can figure out ways to get your family involved, your company involved, or just simply decide to get involved yourself, because they are an amazing organization that I believe give people a hand up, not a handout. That being said, get ready. The name of our show today is Tears in the Jungle. Very special guest joining us all the way from Australia are two amazing people. And I looked for words in my soul that could come up with better than amazing, because what they're doing, what their family is doing, what their commitment to the planet is way beyond what I can come up with in my grossest form of exaggeration, and even my best. They are amazing. They are superheroes. Their family are superheroes. And their vision is to save orangutans in Borneo and Sumatra. Their mission is to create greater awareness of the issues facing the orangutan and their habitat, to empower children and adults to make a difference, and to help raise funds to save orangutans from extinction. It is a big, huge job, a big use yes, they have answered the call to. And I would just like to share with our listeners a truly other magnificent piece to the show before we start. Their names are Will and Dan Clark, or William and Daniel Clark. They said they answered either one. And Daniel has cerebral palsy, and he spends most of his time in a wheelchair, which to me makes the story all the more magnificent. And don't think for a minute that it even slows him down. He is part of a community that cares about him and what they have done. I probably will never get to do in my lifetime. And we're going to talk about that. So you guys, thank you for not only agreeing to be on the show, but what you're doing for everybody on the planet in your journey to help save the orangutans.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on your show. I've heard a lot about it, and I can't wait to start the interview process.
I can't either. So, Dan, let's start with you, because you're the one that started all this, you young troublemaker. I mean, at a very young age, you had an impact from Steve Irwin. And for people that don't remember, I do, he was the crocodile hunter who died. What happened, and why did his death impact you so much and start you on a journey, not to, like, save crocodiles, but save the orangutans?
Yeah, well, Daniel can tell you all about that scene. It was his quest from the start.
Ever since I was a little boy, I need to watch his documentaries over and over again. I was so captivated by what he did. And the one about the orangutan really inspired me. And when he died, I thought, who is going to save him now? And then I thought, why can't I save him? So it really went from there.
So you literally, the impact of his life lives on in you. I mean, very, very inspirational. From a TV show, and I mean, that show used to scare me to death. I mean, I'm not going to be wrestling crocodiles anytime soon, believe me, but it's amazing to me that his message touched you so much. Look what you're doing. So I want to know, either Will or Dan, what did your mother say when you said, oh, I'm going to save the orangutans? How did that go over in the family?
Well, when Dan posed the question to all of us, and then when I joined later on,
right.
Mum and Dad were faced with two options. They could either just look at us and go, oh, that's great, and then just let it lie and then not do anything about it, or they could choose to do what they did and go, okay, we'll support you. What do you need us to do? And that's basically what they've been doing the entire journey. Whenever we want to do something, we've often described it as like driving a ship or a boat or something like that. Daniel and I are the directors, the captain saying where to go, and Mum and Dad are in the engine room making sure everything is still pumping along and able to keep going forward. So they were a bit shocked at first, but they've been really supportive of both of us the whole way through, and I'm really grateful for that.
And it's been a long time. So the way that I heard about you was from probably Jim Reese and Carter and Olivia, One More Generation. And they told me about the OMG kids. I love them. I've met them. They've come out here. We've spent time with them in Atlanta. They're like just, I adore them as well. But Karen Vaughn was on the show, and I read the entire book about Magnificent Kids, and it's 23 superheroes who are changing the world. Now it's your turn. And I read your story, and I said to Kelly, my show producer, I have to interview these kids. Like, there is just, it's just got to happen. Because, first of all, to me, orangutans, like, it's the reason why my husband won't go to zoos. He can't stand looking at any type of primate in activity. He said, in captivity, he said, they look into my soul and say, why aren't you getting me out of here? So there's an emotional connection for me. So I was trying to figure out from reading the story and doing my research, how did it go from Dan saying, I want to save the orangutans, to the trip that you took, traveling 7 days in the jungle to get to them? What happened?
Well, it's after Daniel made his wish, because he was approached by the Starlight Foundation.
Yes, I want to talk about that too. Yes.
Yeah. After that happened, and after a whole lot of events happened, one after the other, we were approached by an anonymous sponsor who wanted us to see the orangutans in the wild, because he saw all the work that we were doing, and he thought it would be such a shame if we never saw them where they were meant to be. And so when we went over there, we saw the orangutans in the wild. It was such an amazing experience. And then when we got back, we said to ourselves, not many people would get this opportunity, so we wanted to share our experiences with as many people as we could. And then as we were writing the book, our book Tears in the Jungle, we thought people can learn from this as well. So we turned it into this educational picture book, which was fun, but had fun facts in it. And that was the main thing that launched ourselves up and gave us something to talk about. And
Funny, also, we still don't know who that anonymous donor was. Whoever he was that got to Borneo, we thank him so much.
You know, that was, I looked. I'm a good researcher, and I was going down that rabbit hole trying to figure out if you ever did know who it was. And, you know, bless him or her for making that happen.
Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about the book because there's so many components to it. First of all, from what I have read, and I don't want to make assumptions, it really changed the relationship between the two of you, because this was, you know, Daniel's idea. He's going to do it. It's his thing. And you're the younger brother and blah, blah, blah. But something really changed so that it became the William and Daniel story. Is that accurate?
I was going through this journey. We saw how much of an impact I will make it, and what up, do they return to each other and say, let's do it together. We can be more powerful as a duo than as a single act. So, I guess it works really well. I mean, we can do things that I can't do. I can do things that we can't do. So we complement each other.
I love that. It's really a team.
Yeah, it's funny to see that we do still have that brotherly relationship. As we were writing the book, there was one time where I can't remember to this day what it was. I think it was position of a photo or text to go in. And we both of us were so stubborn in our opinions of what to do that we had to settle it using scissors, paper, rock to see whose idea would get into the book.
I love it. I got news for you. Lots of married couples figure out how to solve things by rock, paper, scissors, too. Oh, that's a great part of the story.
Yeah. It's very effective, yeah.
Very effective.
Well, I mean, I still love it.
That's right.
Lost.
So there's...
Yeah, not...
Go ahead, Dan. Okay, I want to know how you came up with the name of it, because I start laughing till I cry when you tell me the rock, paper, scissors story. How did you decide? I mean, I've just written a book, and it was the hardest thing in the world for me was picking the title, and lots of people didn't like it. Lots of people like it. It's too long. It's too short. How did you come up with the title, Tears in the Jungle?
Well, it took quite a while because that was the hard part in writing the book. But we came up with the name because it was, it actually had a double meaning. So, Tears in the Jungle, it can actually mean tears in the jungle, like the jungle is ripping apart. But also, tears in the jungle because the animals are crying that they're losing their habitat. So we thought that was the most effective name to get our message across.
And I, of course, thought of the first one, that if I was there, I'd be crying some tears in the jungle. But to have it be reflective of what's happening to the animals, it's pretty, I'm sure there's lots of crying and wailing in the jungles at night. What did the book do? It cemented your relationship with each other and brought it to another kind of understanding. What about your mom and dad? I keep thinking of Jim Reese because he says things like, I'm just the driver. And we all look at him and like, yeah, right. It can't happen without the support of your family. So did the book and the trip to see really the plight of the orangutans help bring everybody together in this mission?
Yeah, it really has. When Daniel and I finished the first draft of the book, we handed it to our dad, and he was so surprised that we had finished it. And he was like, wow, this is really good. We've got to get this out there. And so then it became like a team effort to get this book that Daniel and I had written, to then get it printed, to get it distributed. And it then became a whole team effort that just made all of us so close, closer than I thought we'd ever be with each other, even though we are family. But like the relationship that I have with my brother is so much stronger now after, and with my mom and with my dad. Just the whole process of the finalizing of the book, the printing of the book, the distributing, the selling, and all of the school talks that we've done as well. It's helped us all so much and given us so many experiences and so many new skills. It's been a really, really amazing journey so far.
Go ahead, Dale.
I guess, oh, no, when we first said to my parents that we wanted to write a book. They said, okay, go ahead. They didn't believe us that we would actually write and finish a book. So when we came back to them with the first draft, they were shocked that kids both 10 and 12 years old had written a 25-page book.
Most people in the world ever don't write a book. So if you're 10 and 12, like I said, it's beyond remarkable. And I don't really ever care that I sound so enthusiastic on the show. It's like, this is amazing to me. And a little sidebar, which I promise not to do too many of, I really do respect my guests, so I do a lot of research. And I watched that whole, I think it was about a 30-minute special that was done on your family on Australian TV. And I'm sitting there thinking, I would love this family. Like, your dad cracks me up. When he was saying, I'm going to just tell everybody, they were competitive ice skaters. And I'm like, what? I'm talking to the TV, I'm saying, huh? And they, one of you said, so Dad, you came in last? And like, yeah, thanks so much for that. We did. I appreciate that one so much. But what a great family. It's like, if I'm ever over there, trust me, there's going to be a knock, knock, knocking on your door.
Yeah, well, that would be something that Daniel and I have always dreamed of, like to go over to America and to actually meet everyone that we've inspired, including yourself as well, seeing as you've given us the opportunity to come on your radio show. Just to come over there, meet all the people we've inspired, and to spread the message even further, because at the moment we're restrained to Australia because we don't have the capacity to go to America.
Maybe but that anonymous donor will listen to this show. And we'll be on the road.
That would be fantastic.
That would be, or some anonymous donor. I'm all for putting that out to the universe because I'll be right there with you. I carry luggage. I clean up plates after everybody eats. So I'll be just a great travel mate with you. I say that. Can you imagine? It'll happen.
If ever we do come to America, we'll be sure to drop in and give you a visit and meet you in person.
There will be no coming to America without time with Mrs. Green, trust me. And I'm it's making my wheels turn. So let's go back to the really important, there's so many important aspects to this. And I'm a great believer in that expression, the journey of a lifetime begins with a single step. And I thought it was kind of ironic since Dan has cerebral palsy, look what he's done with his steps in his unwavering commitment to save the orangutan. So Dan, what happened with your first project? You literally adopted an orangutan through something called the Orangutan Project, TOP, right?
Yeah, basically that's how it started. I was grade 4 at the time, and I just thought, the first step would be to adopt the orangutan, and after I did that, I just told all my friends and all my school about what to adopt an orangutan, and they all did it, and that way it got going, and the orangutan project saw an increased amount of adoptions, and they were like, where are all these adoptions coming from?
So it just started kids, other kids, instead of wanting something maybe for their birthday, they said, no, adopt an orangutan for me for $55 a year. It's that whole pebble in the pond idea. Now, let's talk about the national ambassador of the Australian Orangutan Project. How old were you guys when this happened, and how did that come about? No, don't answer. Don't answer the question. I just got the one-minute warning, so I don't want to have to interrupt you, and we'll just go through to the break. Everybody, I know that if you're listening, you don't want to move. This will be the time to take your bathroom break or go get a drink of water. But I am having the sheer pleasure of doing our show today. The name of it is Tears in the Jungle. Our very special guests from Australia are two amazing young people, Daniel and William Clark. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more about this amazing journey, how much money they've raised, and what's happening, because they stepped up and said, we're going to make a difference. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I think this show today will make you to want to get up, get on your feet, get up and make something happen. Our inspirational guests that we are talking to all the way in Australia, technology never, ever, ever ceases to amaze me. The name of our show is Tears in the Jungle. Our guests are William and Daniel Clark, who are the author of a book by that name. Their mission is to save orangutans in Borneo and Sumatra. And you know what, folks? They're doing it. That's not their mission. That's what they're doing every day. They're creating greater awareness about the issues facing the orangutan, which is daunting to just even think about that. I did a show on palm oil, and I think I cried on that show. They want to empower children and adults to make a difference and help raise funds to save orangutans from extinction. And it's so close if we don't all get up and be a part of it. So let me weave a thread, you guys. I remember now, thank goodness we had the break, that because Dan started doing this Adopt a Orangutan for $55 and his friends started doing it, I think I remember that your dad called the top and said, are you getting like contributions that say because of Daniel Clark? Is that, did I get the story right? Because there's a lot of research about you. Is that accurate?
My dad was curious to see what if the adoptions were actually
right.
Making a difference to the Australian project. And they came back and said, yeah, we've noticed and massive increase, and they were asking my dad, where has it come from? And my dad said, oh, my son Daniel has been spreading the message throughout his school and all adopted orangutans.
And that leads to, sometimes I jump around too much and people are like, where is she going with this? That helped lead to the title National Ambassador of the Australian Orangutan Project, which, knowing what I know about both of you just from reading, it's all about the cause. You don't care about being in the spotlight. You just want to draw attention to your cause. Did that big announcement help a lot with raising money and attention?
Yeah, it really did, because it allowed us to reach an even larger audience, because before we were just 10 and 12 years old, and we were still talking to all of our, well, Daniel was still talking to all of his friends and inspiring those around him. But when we were given that title, some people that wouldn't have listened to us before started listening in, and so it became one of the first small steps to start reaching the larger and larger audiences to help inspire more and more people to do something about the orangutan. So it was really, really helpful, and a big honor as well to have that title at such a young age, yeah.
10 and 12, I really did keep saying, yeah, I was playing with dolls when I was 10, but that's okay. Look what I'm doing now at 65, so I'm making up for it on the other end.
We were still playing with toys and games and whatnot, right, at that age.
that's encouraging, because you took on a big burden. Another step in the journey, which is magnificent and huge, and I really want to spend a little time talking about it, because it does involve politics and promises and helping to get into the spotlight. But I believe that in 2008, and I think the Starlight Foundation was connected, you met the Prime Minister at the time, John Howard. Can you tell us, both of you, what happened and what continues to happen because of that meeting?
Well, Daniel was approached by the Starlight Foundation, who wanted to grant Daniel one wish just to help him out. They were expecting him to say, a new wheelchair-friendly van or something like that to help.
Or your dad said, a new car for me. I heard that.
Yeah.
A new car for your dad?
But Daniel just said, I wanted to save the orangutans of Borneo and Sumatra. So, naturally, because the Starlight Foundation couldn't grant that, they gave us a family pass to the Wallabies match. It was at the end of that Wallabies match that the Australian Wallabies is the Australian rugby team.
Yeah, you have to tell us Americans, you know, for us football is entirely different. Rugby is not the number one sport here in the USA. So, yes, rugby. Okay, so go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I do apologize for that.
No, it's really okay. It's educating us.
Yeah, so we went to the Australian rugby team's rugby match, and after the match, we were fortunate enough to go into the dressing room of the Wallabies team, and it was there that the Prime Minister at the time, John Howard, decided to come in and say hi to the team and say hi to us at the same time. And it was such right place, right time. And then we just started talking to John Howard about everything. It was just amazing.
And then 4 months later, we get a phone call from John Howard's office saying, John Howard is in your area tomorrow. He would like to meet up with you again. And we're like, okay.
Mom, the Prime Minister's coming over.
Yeah. We were panic in cleaning the house. We were up to 2 a.m. that morning cleaning the house, getting ready for the Prime Minister. And then when he came over, he was so nice. He wanted to know more about the orangutans, and he couldn't do that for us.
And it just sounds to me like he was really down to earth.
Yeah, he was. When he was over, sure, he had the title of Prime Minister. He was wearing a suit. He looked really, really sharp and professional. But when he was talking to Dan and I, it really just felt like we had our grandfather over. That was it. It was just, he was so calm. He was so nice, so genuine as well. Whenever he talked to Daniel, he never kept standing over the top of him while Daniel was sitting in his wheelchair. He would always go down on his knees, eye to eye with Dan, and talk to him face to face. And it was just, he understood our passion, and he understood that we were more than just kids. We knew what we were doing.
You touched his heart. So I remembered when I was reading that, I was so fortunate to be invited to the White House in October of 2013. And I want to talk a little bit about your thrill when you got the letter. But when there's someone like a John Howard or like the President of the United States, when they come to a room, there's what I call in the old-fashioned sense a real twitter. I mean, the air becomes supercharged. Yes. Because you know that someone with lots of power, let's be honest, and lots of influence comes in. And I'll never forget this. President Obama, there was a little girl. It was kids from all 50 states that had submitted healthy recipes, and it was the state kids' dinner. And President Obama got down, and this little girl was right in front of me, and she had Down syndrome. And there was not a fake bone in the president's body. He got down, he looked into her eyes, he talked to her, and you can imagine, I was just asking people for more tissues. I was crying. Talk about it. Tears in the jungle. It was tears in the White House. And that's a blessing that you experience with someone. He really didn't have to do that. He didn't have to come to your house.
One of the most powerful people in the world, there's still not time for every single one of us. And it's so heartwarming to experience that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was after we talked with John Howard, the first time we met him, that he said that he was so inspired by Dan and I that he wanted to donate $500,000 towards the orangutans. And that was the first massive step that we had made. We were so happy when he said that. And it was the whole, as you mentioned before, the political nature and the media and the whole spin of everything. It was only that second, it was a separate second pledge of $200,000, which would have been great if it went through, but because of the timing of when he made that promise, it was right at the election, and so it couldn't have been anything but it couldn't have gone through unless he got in. And unfortunately, the way it was, he just didn't get reelected. I mean, we were disappointed that he didn't get in, but we're in no way angry with Mr. John Howard or anything like that. We're still so thankful that he donated that initial $500,000. It was just
kidding. Amazing. And what it did to raise awareness. I mean, there's just such that part in the journey of your life with the steps, the big steps and the little steps that you're taking. I want to make sure that I had to look up this group because I admit I didn't ever hear of them, but is it called INXS? What are they called? That wrote a song for you called Tears in the Rain?
Oh, INXS.
INXS. See, my kids will be laughing at me. INXS. Okay.
Yeah.
I looked them up. I'm like, I know some of their songs. INXS. Okay. Like, what is she talking about?
that was a truly amazing experience. We were fortunate enough we just wrote a letter out to INXS saying, this is what we're doing. Hope you can support us in what we're doing. And they were so supportive. They recorded a video message and sent it to Dan and I saying, we're INXS. Go, you guys. You're doing awesome. Keep it up. We support you. And it blew us away, absolutely. And then later on, I can't remember how long it was after that, maybe a month or so, but they invited us to one of their concerts that was around in the area. We sat down and we enjoyed the concert. It was a fantastic time, I have to say. It was a great concert. And then, out of the blue, one of them, the drummer, came forward and said, okay, this next song was inspired by some two lads that we've got in the audience today, Daniel and William Clark, who's saving the orangutans, and this song is called Tears in the Rain.
Oh, my God.
And it was just, it was so amazing. It sent chills down all of our spines, especially from Mum and Dad, who grew up listening to the INXS songs. It was just, and the song itself was amazing. It had like a jungle beat to it. It had great vocals. And being the musician that I am as well, it was just, it was so amazing to listen to them and to know that they were inspired by us to write that song. It was just...
And I listened to it. And you know who I thought they were? Because I don't really care if you guys laugh at me. My kids and grandkids laugh at me all the time. I thought it was NSYNC. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not this. But I didn't know who it was. It's not my generation, okay? But I love it. Yeah. And if they heard it, they'd get a kick out of it, too. So NXS. And they'll get proper billing when I write about them. Okay. Let's talk about your goals. Because what you hope to do, you set one goal and then another goal and then another goal. So in 2009... I think it was you, Dan, that said, we're going to raise $1 million. Where are you in terms of that goal right now, and why did you pick $1 million?
So we have raised $765,000. So that being that, it was still comfortable that we I read that and that on money. But I get we picked $1 million because we think that it's a very achievable figure to reach. And what we won't stop at $1 million. It'll work like a small goal in the long run. So when we hit $1 million, hopefully very soon, we'll just set another goal.
There's no doubt in my mind that when you reach it, you'll set another goal. So, Will, what happens to you when your brother says, I know, why don't we set out to raise $1 million? Do you roll your eyes and say, I'm going to go play my music for a while? Or what happens to you? Like, oh, no, here we go again.
At the time that we set that goal, I was a bit questioning, like, oh, could we really do it?
Questioning your brother's sanity?
I do that constantly. but when we started that goal off, I wondered whether we could reach it or not, but I also thought that whether or not we reach that goal or not, we'll still achieve part of that goal.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether we raised 900,000 in total and then we couldn't do it, or we raised 100,000 or even 1,000 or $10 in total and we couldn't do any more. Every single dollar, every single cent counts towards saving the orangutans, and every single little part makes a huge, huge difference to the orangutans and their habitat. So I thought, well, even if we never make the $1 million, which, I mean, it is looking like we're on the track to reach it now, but whenever we could have achieved, it was still going to make a massive difference. So I was like, I'll give it a go. I'll see how it goes and we'll see how far we get, knowing that whatever we do end up achieving, it was going to make a massive, massive difference. And it has.
And what you're actually doing with the money, I know part of it, is to literally buy land that's preserved. Is that correct? For the, preserves that the orangutans can live on?
Absolutely. With the money that we've raised, we've been able to sponsor over 108,000 acres land in Indonesia.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's absolutely amazing to think that we've sponsored that much.
I love it. I didn't see that anywhere. 108,000 acres. Okay, guys.
And what that does, it goes, that money that we donate and the sponsored land that we have, that all goes through the Orangutan Project's Safeguard Program. And what that allows is that it hires local wildlife rangers to patrol the land. So we haven't bought the land as such, but we're sponsoring the protection of that amount of land. So the rangers just patrol 108,000 acres of land to make sure no illegal loggers come in and cut down the trees, no poachers come in to hunt the orangutans. Nothing bad happens to that area. So that place, that amount of land, is safe.
Oh, my gosh. And we're going to have to take another break, and I have lots more questions. I did do a show about one woman that called me that went to Borneo. And I was so emotional on the show that I never put it out on the national network. I put it on my, you know, on my page and tweeted about it in Facebook. But it was like, I totally broke down when she talked about the burning and the palm oil devastation and the poaching. It was like, it was pretty overwhelming for me. So everybody, stay here with us. I know you're not going to want to move. William and Daniel Clark, Tears in the Jungle. We'll be right back and hear more about what they're doing and what they're up to next.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Thank you for joining us. The name of our show today is Tears in the Jungle. Our guests are William and Daniel Clark. They have taken a journey that is beyond my understanding. And you know, you guys, I called you superheroes. And that's kind of like, I love to watch all those superhero movies with my grandson. But I don't use that term lightly when I interview people, young people, people of any age that are really doing what I call superhero work right here on Earth. And I thank you for that because I happen to care a lot about the orangutans. So can you guys still hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I was having a little trouble with the audio, so I just raised the hand. I was like, okay, thanks. I'm glad you can hear that part. And I really am happy that you clarified the you're not buying the land, you're hiring poacher, wildlife people to protect it. But I want to ask you this. So the 108,000 acres that you're helping to protect, could a big company come in and buy it and cut the trees down and destroy the habitat to put palm oil factories in?
No, because the land that was sponsored is National Park.
Okay.
So it's part of the National Park. So no companies can enter. The biggest threat that National Parks over there have is illegal loggers. So independent people, like three or four people, will come in with chainsaws and just chop down trees.
So you feel like it's safe from future devastation? That really matters.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And that land then goes to securing the orangutan's habitat for the future. So that people, like companies and individuals, can't come in and take the habitat away from them.
You know, it's always just hard for me to believe when I do shows like this to think that anyone could hurt one of those creatures, or for me, any creature on Earth. But it's like they are so like human beings, and I think they get sad, and I think they get happy, and I think they look into your soul. So, and I have only met them in zoos, so I have not had the gift of really having one touch me and sit next to me like you two have. And is that an accurate feeling?
Yeah, it's like nothing. There was one moment on one of the wharfs as we were going back to the boats after one of the days, and Cicely, a 35-year-old female orangutan, decided to just walk down the wharf and sit down and have a snack of some berries that we found. And it was the most amazing experience for me because, as you said, I was able to just go right up next to Cicely and just put my arm around her. She had no worries about me at all. I was calm. I was quiet. She was calm. It was just communicating without words. It was
right.
Really, really special.
You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but of course I told everybody for a year that I had Dr. Jane Goodall on the show. And the thing that amazed me about her is that she's probably one of the most iconic figures in the world. I mean, who doesn't know who Jane Goodall is? And she is as down to earth as, you know, as anybody you'd want to meet. I was so nervous doing the show. And somebody said to me, why are you nervous? Nobody's going to listen to a word you say anyway, because they're tuning in to hear Jane Goodall. So it's like, yeah, I've listened to me do the show with her. And it's like, you guys, it's your story. And just hearing what your experiences have been makes my life work feel meaningful, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, and Jane Goodall is doing some fantastic work. And I'm sure she's had some similar or even better experiences than we have had with the orangutans. But, of course, when we had these moments with the orangutans that we were able to get so close to them, we always had the guides and the officials all around us making sure that we didn't cause distress to the orangutans or anything like that, just making sure that we weren't being a bit silly around them. But it was still absolutely amazing.
I'm glad that we can use our experiences to impact other people's lives. I mean, when people see those photos of Will and I with the orangutans, people realize that these orangutans are not that different to us.
Right.
They're many characteristics that we have. So it makes that emotional connection with people.
And Dan, for you, who said to your mother when you were you 10? Oh yeah, I'm going to adopt an orangutan because of Steve Irwin. Was it somehow like affirming to you, or like, yes, this is what I thought it was going to be like when you actually sat down next to them? Did you have a moment where you thought, yes, this is what I'm supposed to do?
I get that moment really hit me when we went to one of the care centers in Borneo, and I got to hold the baby orangutan. And these babies were only about 4-6 months old, and it was really sad because the baby were all orphans. They had their mothers killed, and it was just so sad. I get when I was holding these babies, it was like holding another person's life in your hands. Like, you have the ability to change that life.
And change the future for them forever. I mean, this is, to me, such a long-term commitment. And I really thought about whether I should ask this question or not, because you're both really young, and I'm going to be 65 and still saying, I wonder what I'm going to really do when I grow up, because I keep being on these fabulous journeys. But do either of you feel as though this will always be a part of your life's work? I mean, it's a big job. Do you think that this will be a big part of your journey, Are we going to have you be a famous rock star, Will, with In Excess? I'm going to say it over and over, In Excess, In Excess, In Excess.
Well, absolutely. The orangutans, Tears in the Jungle, and all the work that I've done with my brother will definitely stay with me and be a massive part of my life. But I'm hoping in my career that I get into something like wildlife photography, so I can show people like different sides of nature, different sides of animals, and just to let people know of things they may not know before. Otherwise, possibly become an actor. I've been doing drama for a while, so that's one thing that I'd love to get into and really break the market and become successful at that. But it's just, at the moment, I'm still focusing on the orangutans, but those would be two things that if I had the opportunity to, I would grasp, hold on to them. And as well as my music, my piano, become a writer and performer. And just within the arts, stuff within the arts I absolutely love, and I'd use all these different things to then link back to the orangutans, help the orangutans, and inspire more people to make a difference through whatever media, whatever avenue I can, and whatever avenue I'm good at.
And that helps with the cause. I mean, I always think of if not just rock stars, but famous actors took the role of taking on the environment, if more of them, and there are, of course, many of them. I mean, Jessica Alba has a $1 billion company selling natural products, truly natural, ethically sourced products. But if you became a famous actor, it would help with your messaging for both of you. I mean, I'm going to be watching.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would just provide another avenue to reach a wider audience. And of course, I'm into the arts and whatnot, but Daniel has very, very different interests to me. I'm sure he can tell you all about what he wants to do with his life.
Dan, I want to hear that too, because I know you're up to a lot. That mind never stops.
Yeah, at the moment, I'm at university in Sydney. I'm doing a degree in social science, and hopefully I can use that degree when I'm done to enter in politics, and hopefully spread the message of the environment within politics at that level where the people that can make real difference in our world will actually take notice of the environment.
And really impact policy. I mean, that's huge. It's really huge. We just passed the Clean Air Act, you know, whatever you call it. We didn't pass it, but, you know, it has to be renewed. And it's really kind of disgusting how watered down it's become. And to me, public policy is so important as a global, you know, community where there's no boundaries when it comes to what's going on. So I'm going to be watching we're going to have Dan for president. It sounds really, or prime minister, sorry. It wouldn't be this prime minister in your country. I have to get that right. And I'll never live down. And I want to tell you this. My daughter, Emily, is getting married in October. She's a big environmentalist. Her fiance is. We love him. And their dream is to come to Australia for a year. And you can promise me, I promise you, that if they come, they'll find you, both of you, and make a connection. And Emily she's a wild and crazy girl, and she'll do it. She cares deeply about this planet of ours. So she's an actress.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, she's an actress. She's a beautiful redheaded actress. Sorry, she's taken, and you're both too young anyway.
If I do decide to come out to Australia, we'd love to catch up with them and make that connection to your family. It would be great.
And I'm just one of these people. Dreams come true. Dan, what are you going to say? We have about 4 minutes left, or three. So what were you going to say?
The more people that we can inspire little bit more people that can make a difference in our world. I always say to everyone that I meet, no matter who you are or where you come from, we can all make a difference in our world, no matter how big or small.
I'm so happy that you said that, because I think people do feel powerless at times. What difference can I make? You can vote, you can buy something or not, you can boycott things, you can get people elected. There's so many things you can do. You can just sign a petition. And I want to, before, I would just be so sad if I didn't remember this, but everybody who's listening, the website is tearsinthejungle.com. That's the call to action to the listeners, and we're listened to in 32 countries around the world. So it's a global community. You can purchase the book on that website, but it's tearsinthejungle.com. There's a way to donate. You can become a monthly supporter. So I hope that people get inspired to support your work before we get off the airwaves.
It's great to see on our website we've got links to different charities and organizations that help the orangutans. We've got many products that we have on for sale as well, especially our main book that we wrote.
And the book, just looking at the pictures in the book will help make people cry. And I think, like I said, tears of joy, there's irony there. People should not be uncomfortable about tears. So let's end on this note, if you don't mind. How do your friends treat you? Is it really, do they think you're big like rock stars, or do they keep you honest? What kind of relationship do you have with the people that you live with and see every day?
Well, our friends are very supportive. They don't treat us like rock stars, because to them we're just like normal people doing this on the side. And they do keep us grounded all the time, whenever we're doing media or anything like that. They stop us from getting big head on ourselves. So we're really grateful to have a great support network.
They'll slap you around if you get out of line and get too big ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really great. And, you know, I want to tell people that Tears in the Jungle, like, I wrote a book. It's really hard to write a book, and then it's really hard to get it out there. And you guys, it became an Australian bestseller. It's over, I don't know how many you're up to now, but you reached and passed the $5,000 mark, which I found out after researching Amazon, that is huge to be able to sell that many copies of a book. I mean, that is a big, big deal.
Especially since when Dan and I were first writing it, we were approaching lots of publishers and no one would accept us. So as we were like young writers, the first book that we had written, so we decided to self-publish it. So we did all the work ourselves within our family, sourcing the printers, sourcing the distribution and selling. Yeah, so we don't have a publisher. We get as much profit as we can to give back to the orangutans.
It's been
a lot of work, but it's definitely been worth it to self-publish it without a publisher and to go through this whole process. Dan and I were able to press the button to start the very first print of books in the printing company. It was really cool.
An epic moment. And it's like nani nani boo boo to the publishers that said no. It's like the Harry Potter.
Yes.
You know, J.K. Rowling's. Nobody wanted her books. Well, aren't they sorry? It's a perfect example. Oh, yeah, well, let me show you. So it's all about the power of what you both talk about in your message, is to keep going. Anything is possible. Don't let anything stop you. I'm not sure I could do a 7-day trek in the deep jungles in Borneo. I'd be wondering about where is the next bathroom. I mean, I'm always fixated about where's the bathroom. Okay, you guys, I mean, I love you from afar. We have 30 seconds left. Thank you for showing up in my life, for inspiring all of us. Next week, you guys, a whole different shtick, Ryan Emmons. He's the CEO of Waiakea Hawaiian Volcanic Water. Could I make this up? I couldn't. Everybody make it a great green week. You guys, thanks for being on the planet.
Well, thank you very much for having us on the show.